A couple of weeks ago, we chatted to a fellow named Bronte Price, who was very concerned about the missed opportunity of the federal government with the census around identifying the number of LGBTQI members of our community, where they are, and the circumstances in which their life is in. We've now got to wait another 5 years before that can happen. That was a sadly missed opportunity. Ironically, this week, it was Monday, National Coming Out at Work Day, or it may have even been international. So I thought it would be good to get Bronte Price back on to continue the conversation we had 2 weeks ago, and he's been kind enough to do that. Bronte, good morning and welcome back to The Pulse.
Good morning, Rob. Thanks very much.
Now, it's very good to have you back. We had an interesting conversation, quite a confronting conversation, but I must admit, for a 64-year-old heterosexual who went through all the horrible prejudiced situations of a young teenager through the 60s and 70s, and my view of life, which was grossly ill-informed, I don't know whether it's trying to make up time, but I think we have to have a different message these days about homosexuality and other associated differences within the human structure that you've lived through yourself, and we hopefully make it easier for the next generation to not have to feel like second-class citizens because of it.
And I think you're right. I think that when we grew up in the 60s, 70s, it was a really difficult time to be a teenager. It was more difficult to be LGBTIQ plus at that time, and, you know, every state and territory and federally we had laws that made it a criminal offence to be homosexual or to engage in what they called homosexual acts. And we've made massive strides since then. Lots of those laws have been changed, thank goodness, to be far more inclusive. And you're right, the younger generation is becoming far more aware, I think, of the issues faced by people who are not just gay and lesbian, but, you know, bisexual, transgender and so on. And they're now expecting to be included. They're expecting also to have a voice, and they're taking up that charge, I think, which is a really good thing. And we can all learn lots from those people. I hope in the midst of all that the struggle for equality isn't forgotten, because it's been a hard road, and lots of people, lots of elders, if you will, older people in the LGBTIQ plus community have struggled for equal human rights, often at lots of great personal cost to them. So it's important, I think, to acknowledge and honour those people and their struggles.
Bronte, before we get to the core of the matter, which is coming out, I just wanted to talk to you about your sense of the views of people. You've seen firsthand, no doubt, over a lot of years, living the life of a heterosexual. You'd have been involved in conversations where people would openly condemn and ridicule the gay community, and I guess it must have been tough for you to sit through, even if it was just a passing joke or something. But do you sense today that there might be still an element of prejudice against the gay community for whatever reason, but are you thinking now, just as you generally move around the world, that people are more open and understanding as you go around, or is there still a hidden little prejudice?
There's cause of prejudice still, and there are people who will still crack a homophobic joke and just pass it off as it's just a joke, just as they do with jokes about people who have a disability or older people or people who, you know, are Indigenous. And we know that those jokes aren't just jokes. They're passively racist or they're passively homophobic. And, you know, as a young man living a straight life, because it was just not safe to come out, you just inwardly you'd cringe every time even family members, let alone friends, would make one of those jokes or say some homophobic comment that you knew, oh, was like a little turn of the dagger in your heart. And therefore, you'd keep that door shut, the closet door shut, just a little bit longer, because it still wasn't safe to come out. But to go to your question, there is in, I think, every society, almost in every town or city, there are still cores of, there are still geographic areas where it's just unsafe to be kind of openly out, if you will. There are people who are reasonably extreme homophobes or transphobes, and that's going to be a really hard core of people to try and educate. And when we do educate about inclusion, we start with the people who are at least open to it.
One of the interesting things about multiculturalism in Australia, which is a fantastic part of our life, and when it's embraced correctly, it's a wonderful thing. But, of course, there is the problem that different cultures have different views of different social things, and homosexuality and associated issues with people is one of those. And I think, generally speaking, the Anglo-Saxon culture that we have brought up with, the Christian, if you like, upbringing, has been a little closed off, but probably more rapidly open to the change. That's the people, not necessarily the authorities. I think they're a long way behind accepting it, but people on the ground are. But certainly some of the other cultures that have come to Australia still have some pretty ingrained negativity about homosexuality. Do you see that from culturally, as you move around, that it's a little bit harder nut to crack?
Look, I think we've got to just keep in mind that as white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, for example, we lived lives that were really difficult, and that culture was all of those things we mentioned before. They were racist, they were homophobic and transphobic and so on. And there are still cores in that white Australian society, if you will, that are deeply homophobic. And there are just as we were brought up with those cultural beliefs, there are other people who have come to Australia from overseas, and they retain some of those beliefs as well. But I'd be really reticent to, you know, point the finger, because we need to keep in our heads the fact that we sometimes have short memories, and it's not so long ago, it's within our lifetimes that we were treated in those really bad, awful ways by people who we thought were, you know, close friends and family as well.
Your own experience, Bronte, it fascinates me. I mentioned to you off air that there's someone else who's recently come into my life that's lived exactly the life that you have, of fear of coming out as a teenager, forced to hide in a heterosexual life, became a husband and a father, and to many just lived a normal life. Looking back now, how painful was that for you to literally be someone else for 20 years?
Yeah, it was really painful, and I don't think you understand, as the person involved, I don't think I understood the danger or the harm it did to my mental health. And so you spent every day knowing that you were gay from a very early age, spent every day trying to make sure that what you wore or how you powdered your hair or how you walked or any mannerisms you had wouldn't give way to the fact that you were gay. That wouldn't give it away, sorry. And I, you know, we do things to even enhance how safe we are. So at school, I was a pretty good athlete and hockey player. I would do the physical work on the farm as, you know, as much as my brothers and all of that stuff. You play team sports so that you fitted in. And so all of that fitting in to be someone that you're not, it has to take a toll on mental health, and I think it does. Whether that shows itself in depression or other ways, it's something that then takes, after you do come out, and I want to talk about that in a minute, but after you do come out, it's just this feeling of just euphoria for a while, thinking that, wow, I can be my authentic self and I don't have to worry about how I walk or how I dress or what my mannerisms are. And, of course, there's lots of people who still remain in the closet, and we're not here to judge that. There are some people who don't come out. They are just out all their lives. But there's others who will stay either partly or fully in the closet forever. They might be out to close family, but they're not out at work or out to their sporting clubs. And there's no, I think it's really important also to understand that there's no template for coming out. People make a decision about whether or not to come out in different ways. And, you know, if they haven't got a strong supportive network around them, if they haven't got at least one close person that they can come out to, then they'll probably remain in the closet until they feel that they can do that.
Yeah, there'll be no names, no pactual, of course, but I think I know someone who is who's an adult male and is gay and has gone to the other point of fighting it so hard, fighting with the shame, that he's now almost become homophobic to deal with it. Is that another fear as well, that your people around you have made you feel so shamed about what you feel that you've fought it all your life?
Yeah, you do. And there's a lot of self-hate because of that tape that has been recorded in your brain from all those jokes and those comments and how LGBTIQ plus people are portrayed in media and in advertisements and or not. You know, they're just not there. They're not on radio shows or TV shows or in movies. They now are increasingly. But back in the day, back in the 60s, 70s, they just weren't. Or, you know, people would refer to a gay person as, oh, I think he's one of them. Mm. And it was like, wow, it's just this really hurtful, harmful kind of comment that was based purely on someone's assumptions, you know?
Yeah, what was interesting, I'd be interested in how you viewed people while you were living your secret life, if you like, and there were overtly gay people in media in particular, seen on television, heard on radio. Did you see them as champions of your cause, or did you see them as something that you needed to keep away from?
That one.
That, yep.
Keeping away from, because if I in any way indicated that I liked them or, you know, I was a fan of them, it was, well, by association, you know,
yep.
Gay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder. I just look at some, you know, some comedians out now. Reese Nicholson, Hannah Gadsby are doing some really good work about highlighting it. But there were others back in the 60s and 70s who just really said, "No, well, bugger it. I am what I am." And they took the cause up to the people. They got a lot of criticism for it. But I often wondered how they were viewed by other members of the gay community.
Yeah, I can only speak for myself as a closeted gay person back in the. In the day, and I just would either not comment or go along with, you know, the homophobic jokes that everyone else was passing around.
Yeah, that must be terrible. Another thing that fascinated me listening to, you sent through a couple of little videos of you making commentary. During a married situation, it's usual to suggest that your best friend is your wife and you have this relationship together. At any stage, did you sense that she sensed you weren't really emotionally connected, or did you at times feel that you just really, you're almost busting to sit down and have that conversation and come out with a woman that you chose to be your, you know, almost false life partner?
Yeah, that was exactly it. And without being disrespectful, I didn't fall in love with the woman that I married, and that sounds really hard and hurtful. And but we were friends, and there were really good times in the marriage. Of course, otherwise, you know, you wouldn't have lasted 13 years. But there were times too when I really struggled in the marriage. So it was, again, playing this role of a dual life, knowing that there was a part of me that I wasn't being authentic to.
Mm. And, of course, the other thing is you have four children and bringing them up to be the best father you possibly be. And I reckon just by the comments that you made, you would have been a damn good father. But the day of reckoning, if you like, that those boys realised that you weren't necessarily who you were, it's been a mixed response, it seems. But how is that playing out for you now? Is it still something that eats away at you?
Yeah, I enjoy being a dad, and I think that when I was, you know, in the household and being father, I think I was a really good dad, and I was engaged in the whole process of parenthood and bringing these four boys up. The oldest one turns 40 next year, and the youngest one is 36 next year. So they were, you know, there were four under four, pretty much, and a couple of them have struggled with me being gay from the day I came out, and it's now 25 years since I came out. And so what that means is that there are a couple of my sons who haven't spoken to me since before I got married to my husband back in 2019. The other two talk with me on a regular basis, and that's all good. It saddens me greatly. It breaks my heart that at the moment I haven't got a relationship with two of them.
Mm. Yeah, that would be pretty tough. What is interesting now, though, is that you are in, I suppose, a really happy place, but so late in life, 2019, I guess you were somewhere near 60, and we of that age know that we're staring mortality straight down the barrel, Bronte, but you've found this happy place. Are you working harder every day to enjoy this amazing freedom that you now must have? How do you view the world now?
Yeah, much more slowly, I think. I'm grateful for every day that I can spend with this man that I married, and I'm just grateful that I did come out and not live my entire life in a place where I didn't need to be. Having said that, you know, I can't imagine what it would have been like to be a generation earlier than me, and there are some very brave and committed people who were in relationships with the person they authentically loved back in those really difficult times, and I can't imagine the things they had to fight for and struggle for. So I'm in a really good space at the moment, and I'm just grateful that, you know, back in 2017, the Marriage Act has changed to enable us to get married. Having said that, I've got to say that the postal vote itself caused enormous trauma to lots of members of the LGBTIQ+ community, but that's kind of water under the bridge.
Yeah, well, hopefully it is, but hopefully we've learnt lessons from it. I sense in the world that I live, Bronte, that it's a lot more accepting world, and it's mainly because of education. The acceptance comes with understanding, and there's a lot of people, and you've now joined the list, people who have been brave and strong and prepared to stand up and spread the word and share experiences and make people who previously didn't understand, and in fact not only not understand, but were forced to have opinions that they perhaps wouldn't normally share. I think the world's different. I hope it continues to be better, and for teenagers now, hopefully the life's better, but your experience is still very valuable in a day when we celebrate coming out as a good thing. Do you see yourself now as a potential champion to make a change to a young man or young woman who needs to be honest with themselves and those around them?
Look, it was back in the 70s that a guy called Harvey Milk in San Francisco made a speech in which he said, you've got to give them hope. and you've got to, you know, they've got to come out. And he was shortly afterwards assassinated as a councillor in San Francisco. And he was an LGBTIQ plus activist. And I think that's what doing things like this interview do. We hope that just by telling little bits of our story, that out there somewhere is perhaps a teenager who's struggling with, or it could be a person who's, you know, our age, who's struggling with coming out or their sexuality, and wondering what are the next steps. And if any one person gets some hope, as Harvey Milk would say, from something like this, telling parts of our story, then the job has been accomplished, I think. Telling the stories, as you said, is the most significant part, I think, of educating people and of people, the general population, getting to understand what it's like to be a member of the LGBTIQ plus community.
Yeah, there's so many situations at the moment around phobias, if you like, certainly racism, and we've spoken a lot on this station also about the education around Indigenous Australia, the true history, if you like, of Indigenous Australia, and the more that's taught and the more people understand the truth about that, it's a lot easier for them to understand the difference that our Indigenous community live under daily inside the current community. And it's exactly the same for your experience. It's just about having people understand that it's not a shameful thing and it's not a decision thing. When you get politicians that stand up and give the impression that I can wake up tomorrow morning and decide to be gay, it infuriates me, and it shows ignorance and stupidity. Do you believe that in amongst the top end of Australia that the leadership to make your circumstances easier and the job you're doing now by spreading the word easier, if we just had a lot better rhetoric coming from our leaders?
Yeah, I think if we had, I want to go back and just say that Scotland has just mandated the teaching of LGBTIQ plus history in their schools. That's a massive step, because in Australia we don't teach any such history here. I think we've got to understand we've got more openly out LGBTIQ plus MPs in federal parliament than we've ever had before. And so young people looking to go into politics can see those role models. There are some absolute champions of LGBTIQ plus causes in parliament already, both particularly at federal level but also at state. And that's where the wins are being made, I think. And they're not just on one side of the chamber or the other, and they're not just in the lower house, they're in the Senate as well. And so that sort of gives us lots of hope, I think, for someone like Senator Janet Rice to be out as a bisexual, which is often, you know, part of the community that's erased, is a really visible but also brave thing to be, I think. And she got voted in. We can't forget that. So times are moving and things are changing, but it's slow.
Yeah, for that reason, where do we go to find our champions? Because as the Senate chamber or the House of Representatives federally, you'd think would be a really good place for a confident message to be delivered. But we still have this clearly, openly homophobic people working alongside gay men and women for allegedly the same cause. You'd think at some stage they'd sit down, have a chat and educate themselves, but it sends sends the wrong message, and it's just counterproductive to the work that you're doing yourself, Bronte.
Yeah, it can undermine it. And, you know, there are people like Penny Wong, of course, who daily are trying to send the right message, and Janet Rice, as I said before. And we've got to understand that in Victoria we've got a really we've got a commissioner now for LGBTIQ plus community. Like a decade ago, that position wouldn't have even been thought of. That's a massive shift to have a high level person, and the current incumbent is also Indigenous, you know, championing the cause for the queer community. That's massive, I think. I think as long as there's some balance between, you know, the reporting of the negative stuff as well as the positive messages coming out of Parliament Houses, I think that's all we can ask for at the moment.
Bronte, we've had a fantastic chat. It's been going for 20-odd minutes, and I've enjoyed it thoroughly. I love your courage and your honesty, but leave us with a message for a teenager who might be listening today that's fighting these inner demons about acceptance in the community, in the household that they're in. How do they make that step?
Yeah, get in touch with a support service. So just check out LGBTIQ plus support services in your state, and you'll come up with organisations such as Minus 18, which is devoted to supporting LGBTIQ plus youth in particular. There's a range of really fantastic organisations out there now that cater for all members of the LGBTIQ plus community, whether they're in the closet or whether they're out and proud.
Bronte, thank you so much. Love your work. We'll talk to you again soon on other matters around this subject, but you are a little champion for the cause, and keep up the good work you do, and may I say, enjoy the life that you now have. It's one you've longed for a long time, I imagine, but I guess every day is precious, and make it that way.
Yeah, thanks very much, Rob.
Good on you, Bronte. Bronte Price joining us. It's National Come Out at Work Day. It's an important time for people who live this pain daily to know that there is support and there's courage and networks, and there are that here, and sadly there are people who are still ignorant and counterproductive to the good cause, and there's certainly people that I still have in my life, and I'll continue to try and educate and highlight the foulness of their ignorance, and we'll make a bit of a difference. You're listening to the Front Page 94.7 The Pulse. When we